Initiate Taurat Podcast. Today we're going to talk about a familiar topic. We're talking about Ecclesiastes 3, which has actually gotten some secular airplay because the first 8 or so verses of it are almost the word for word, the words of a song from the 70s, starting in verse 1. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which is has already been, and that which is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past.
So one of the things that this kind of points out, and maybe it's obvious, but you know, there's things in our lives, obviously, that we want to experience and things that we don't want to experience. And of course, this fallen world that we live in is not the way it was intended. Yeah. We live under the curse of sin, and there's lots of real pain and real mourning that we would not experience if we could choose. But this just kind of lays out that, yes, there is a time for these things. These things will happen. But it also points out there's a time for not experiencing that.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is going to stay the same forever.
Right.
Sometimes pain lasts a long time, but... And it reminds me of a saying, fairly common saying, I think, that this too shall pass. And I've always heard people use that phrase for, you know, when somebody's sad or depressed or experiencing pain or whatever, like, this too shall pass. This, don't worry, this, someday things are going to change. Someday things will be better.
Yep.
I heard that, so you checked it, I don't know.
So what. The source of that saying, do a little Google foo here, the saying is believed to be based on a Persian adage passed down throughout time in the 1852 fable called Solomon's Seal by Edward Fitzgerald. A sultan asked King Solomon for a sentence that would be true and good or bad or...
Okay, so even though it's fictional, interesting that it brings in Solomon, because Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes.
Yep.
But according to this fable, the version that I heard, so he asks, and I didn't know it was Solomon when I heard it, but give me a sentence or whatever that when I'm sad, it will make me happy, but if I'm happy, it will make me sad. And he came up with, this too shall pass.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, true that.
Right, and that reminds me of a... radio show I was listening to, and this guy was talking about how he and his wife had been married, I don't know, 5 years or something, and they had a toddler and a baby, and life was just going perfectly. Like, the income was good, everyone was happy, no major life struggles, and the marriage was awesome, and he and his wife were taking a walk in the evening, and he was just thinking how great life is and how awesome his marriage is and his family, and just everything's so perfect. And it suddenly hit him, I wonder how long it's going to be before the next big life struggle happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, not to be like a downer and pessimistic, but it's good to know that in the hard times, yes, this too shall pass. Things are going to change. There's a time for this, but that time won't be forever.
Right.
And there'll be a time for, you know, not just mourning, but also dancing. But it's also good to know that when it's time for dancing...
That'll
if you
come.
Know that there will eventually be another time for mourning, it might not hit you so hard when it happens if you keep these things in balance, you know.
Yeah. So another similar saying that I saw recently by a musician I follow on Facebook, the quote is from Robert Brault, "Life is a collection of moments you would have appreciated more if you had only known they were moments." Hmm. So to your point of knowing that it may not hit us so hard next time when something goes wrong, if we savor the good moments.
Mm-hmm.
So another way to say it would be when things are going good, take them in.
Right.
Stop and take notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And kind of like you were saying in the previous episode, like if you're not thinking of the fact that this won't last forever, you take it for granted a little more that like,
right,
this is going to go on forever. It's not, I don't even know how to say it, but you take it for granted.
Yeah. And then there's the saying, you know, every good thing must come to an end,
right?
Which is a little bit more harsher way to say that this too shall pass.
Right.
Shall pass.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the flip side of.
But it's true. We're revisiting the topic and highlighting that Ecclesiastes tells us about it, that the way things are today isn't the way they're going to be forever. So for good or for ill or indifferent.
Mm-hmm. And I think for believers in Christ, that is not true. Ultimately, every good thing must come to an end.
Right.
Someday there will be no more tears, no more pain,
That's right.
No more crying. God will wipe away every tear.
Yep.
And we will be with him and he'll be with us.
Forever.
For all eternity.
Yes.
And that is, even in the midst of your pain and sorrow in life, like the hardest things that we go through, like, one, God is going to redeem that pain. He's building character in us. And he's teaching us to trust him. But we just know, like Paul said, like these light momentary afflictions cannot compare right to the glory that we're going to have in eternity.
Yep.
And so no matter what you go through, and this may sound trite, oh, someday you'll be with God in heaven. Like, I think it depends on, do you really believe it and how real is that to you, if it's trite or not.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So
when he says here, reread this verse, verse 11, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts. He has put eternity in their hearts. So he has put in us the sense that this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is why people crash so hard when they end up finding themselves asking that question, going, is this it? I mean, mm-hmm. The totality of everything there is what I've experienced so far. This is a gigantic disappointment. So surely there must be more. And the answer is yes, there is more. And then he says, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. So
yeah, right.
It's a mystery. It's for him to know and us to it to be revealed to us over time.
Right, right. So another thought I had. So a lot of these things, as we said and is obvious, a lot of these things we would not choose to go through, but there's a time for them. And this one will freak some people out, a time to love and a time to hate.
Right.
I feel like in this culture, hate is raised up to the ultimate evil, that there's nothing worse than hate.
All, right.
All evil, bad things that a person can do, hate is the worst. Like,
right.
God hates things.
Yeah.
He hates things that deserve to be hated.
Yeah.
And we are supposed to love what God loves and hate what God hates.
Yes, exactly.
And there was a episode of the show Touched by an Angel, which I enjoyed it as a kid, but even then I was like, this is a little cheesy. Not sure the great theologians got together to write this show.
No.
I thought it was good that, you know, okay, so they're putting out a show that's trying to get people to believe in God and
right.
whatever. I don't think it was like specifically Christian, but
right.
I think it was trying to be biblical-ish.
Ish, yeah.
Right. But there was a scene in one of the episodes where this guy is just lamenting, like, there's just so much hate in the world. And I'm just like,
like, that's the lowest common denominator that we can all agree on, that, yes, hate bad.
Right, right.
So we can all gather around that and say, it is not the worst thing in the world.
Right, right. We're supposed to hate the evil things.
Yes.
The things that actually are inherently evil. So there is a verse, Psalm 139. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but toward the end, verse 19 all the way to the end, which is 24. If only you would put the wicked to death, God. Leave me, you men of bloodshed, for they speak against you wickedly, and your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. they have become my enemies. Search me, God, and know my heart. Put me to the test and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there is any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. And so I knew that there were places in the Psalms where David says, I hate evildoers and stuff like that. And I knew there was places where he says, search me and know me, see if there's any wicked way in me or hurtful way. But somebody pointed out to me, is like, these are right next to each other, at least in this chapter. Is it possible that David is saying how much he hates them with the utmost hatred, but while I'm hating evil, which deserves to be hated, make sure that there's nothing wicked in my heart.
Right.
So that I'm not taking this too far or in ways that are evil, you know?
Yeah.
Like the Bible says, be angry, but do not sin.
Right. So the way that David has those sandwiched together there, it basically infers that his hatred of evil and those things, that those are okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because then he goes on right away to say, and search me and know me, you know. So obviously he's assuming those are okay in some measure.
Right, right. And then this just popped in my head. Jesus said, you have heard it said, hate your enemies, you know, love your friends and hate your enemies.
Right, yeah.
That right. But I say, love your enemies.
Okay, and bless those who persecute you.
Right, yeah. Right, right. And of course, we have a lot of that. Like the Old Testament says this, but Jesus says this. Not that he's saying the Old Testament was wrong or something.
He's updating it, yeah.
The
bar has been raised. We're in a different covenant. There are different provisions. And now this is what's expected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't know. So you got to work these things out. I don't know the answer. But again, there is a time to hate.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, I think God wants us to hate our own sin.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to hate the evil of other evildoers, but I think we need to hate our own sin the worst, like with the utmost hatred.
Yes.
And again, as a previous episode, we pointed out that in the Old Testament, the enemies of the Israelites were the Philistines and the...
All the ites.
The Girgashites and the mosquito bites and whatever else there were. But then in the New Testament, we're told to struggle to the point of shedding blood against our own sin.
Yep.
So I've always seen it that way, is like we should hate our own sin because it's coming between us and God.
Yeah.
So.
Are you sick of it yet? Are you done with it yet?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So another one that would possibly ruffle feathers for some people, a time for war and a time for peace. Now, again, in the Old Testament, God commanded the Israelites, go to war against these other nations, destroy them. And of course, you know, he says for their sin is full and it's time for their punishment. But even in the modern days, there's, you know, Christians have struggled with, like, should we fight in wars?
Right.
And a lot of Christian theologians over the centuries have come up with the concept of just war.
Right, just war theory.
Right, and as far as I know, the gist of it is, yes, when it's defending innocent life.
Yeah.
So you should probably never be the one to start a war again unless it's defending innocent people.
Yeah.
Probably for the most part, though, it's you get involved when the aggressor has already made the first move, I guess.
Yeah, and there's no other real option to change the outcome.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we've said before in a different episode, that why did God allow sin or preordain sin?
What was that last part?
God wants to show his mercy and his justice, at least. Obviously, there's more.
Right.
You can't show either of those unless sin exists.
Right.
And as much as I think we would all wish that there wouldn't be any reason for war.
Right.
And again, this is not some justification for war,
right,
but self-sacrifice.
For the good of somebody else.
For the good of somebody else. I mean, that's what Jesus did for us.
Right.
And so if you don't have, I feel so weird saying this. I feel like this is some justification. But if God does not allow war or violence, then there's no chance for someone to sacrifice themselves in defense of another person.
Right.
You know, someday that's all going to go away.
Right.
I don't think that was...
And it was never intended to be that way.
Right. And I know I sound like I'm contradicting myself because I say God preordains everything, but...
Well, then I had said in a previous episode, too, we were talking about the military and that kind of thing, and when we talk about war, I only have one caveat about the whole war thing, and that's simply who determines who goes to war with who,
mm-hmm,
over what's the actual reason. And so...
All right.
So war kind of gets some bad press because of how it's been used by so many people, really falsely, and for some other purpose other than actually to deal with, other than injustice and innocent people being killed and maimed and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Again, my only catch with that is who's determining and for what actual purpose.
Right, right.
But assuming the noble purpose of preventing innocent death, innocent blood, that war becomes a justifiable position. I can't remember, was it Augustine? Yeah, Augustine. Says, must meet these requirements. A last resort, only if all peaceful methods fail. A just cause must correct a grave, immediate, ongoing evil. Valid authority. Yeah, this is probably my rub right here, where I see this being misused. Must arise from a consistent policy or principle. Probable success. Men can't be sent to die hopelessly. Boy, talk about the trench warfare in World War I.
Yeah.
Proportionality. Force must be proportionate and no more than necessary. Exit strategy. It must be fought fairly and end as quickly as possible.
I found one. I just gave it a search. St. Thomas Aquinas also had, I guess, his own just war theory. Or, let's see.
Thoughts on it.
Yeah. The just war theory by Thomas Aquinas has had a lasting impact on later generations of thinkers, etc. So, yeah, as I said, you know, lots of theologians and thinkers have weighed in on it.
Yeah.
Obviously. And I just had this thought. Obviously, I like war movies. And there's a guy that I know. I asked him if he'd be interested in playing my favorite war game, MO44, World War II battle. And he said, no, I would not be interested because I'm anti-war. And I just feel like, why would you play a game that's mimicking war and makes war more fun and interesting? I'm like, okay, whatever. That's fine.
Right.
I respect that. And so there is a part like, okay, should we make entertainment out of war and put it in the movies right. and stuff? But one of the things that I like the most moving scenes in a lot of war movies is when the quote-unquote good guy meets up with the bad guy, perchance, and they help each other.
Right.
And they're like, you know what? I'm not trying to kill you at the moment. You're not trying to kill me. This guy's bleeding to death. Let's just help this guy. And
like, was it Christmas during World War I, where the one German soldier started singing Silent Night?
Right, yeah.
And they had just a little bit of a truce for a little bit.
Yeah, for one day or one night, whatever
that
it was.
Night, yep.
Yeah, there's a movie. We just watched it this past Christmas. I forget what it's called. I think it's just called Silent Night. No, it's not. There's another movie called Silent Night. It's French. That's the one I'm thinking of, Joy Noël.
So okay.
It's the French spelling and... But that was a really good movie. It went through the whole story of, and again, it's Hollywood, so who knows all the details of the accuracy. But yeah, it tells that story of the Christmas truce when they, yeah, I think it was the...
1914.
Yeah, the Americans heard a German guy in another trench singing a Christmas song, probably Silent Night, I guess.
I think it was, yeah.
And then they joined in, and all of a sudden they were like, wait a minute, what's going on? They started coming out of their trenches, and then they... sat around and shared cigarettes and wine and whatever else. So this one hits me a little hard. A time to keep and a time to throw away. At least in the NIV, that's how it says it. That hurts the pack rat in me a little bit. My dad was... I wouldn't call him a hoarder. Not the clinical term hoarder. It doesn't apply to him. But he would just bring home carloads of stuff that he found. Like work is where he worked at the time was throwing something away. And he would bring it home. Like, what are we going to do with this? Like, I don't know, but it's still good. Somebody could use it.
Right.
To figure out something.
That's so painful.
Right. And so trying to learn from him, I've tried to not be that way. But it's sometimes hard.
He was seeing the cartoon. It's the dad. I can't remember if it's a garage or a storage shed or something. And you can see it's packed full. And he's saying to his kids, yes, someday, son, this will all be yours.
Right. This garage full of junk.
Yeah.
It's like full up to the ceiling and wall to wall.
I'm trying. I'm really trying. But I keep forgetting. It's like, okay, if I just throw a little something every week and just keep at it until...
Right.
It's like, am I really ever going to use this again? No, no, I'm not. No, I might not ever need that again.
Right.
No, just say no.
And two things, if anybody wants any tips that I found that are helpful if you're going through stuff in the basement or whatever. And I have two problems. I like to do some woodworking, and every scrap of wood, it's almost like it doesn't matter how small it is. I'm like, why should I throw it away? There might be a very specific use for this someday. And so I throw in a box, and then I collect these boxes, then I have shelves of wood of all different sizes, and I've struggled with this, like trying to get rid of it, but it's still good. It's still good. Why should I buy a 2x4 when I already have one? And if I throw it away, I'm going to have to buy one eventually.
If it's actually a good percentage of a complete 2x, you know, 8 feet worth, sure, sure.
Again, like seriously, I could hold 5 pieces of wood in my hand that small, and I still don't want to get rid of. But now that we start having, we got a fire pit in the backyard, I'm like, okay, the small pieces can for sure be fired. At least I'm getting some use out of them. They're not just. But so one thing that method that I came up with is, all right, it's time to just get rid of this stuff. I have set up some shelves. I'm like, once these shelves are full, everything else is just garbage. So I just start sorting, and I'm like, good piece, not so good. I'll get rid of that. Okay, it's full. Everything else in this pile, it's like, just limit the amount at least, you know?
Yeah.
And the other tip that I heard was, and you're going through, like, these are like specific little knickknacks or tools or things or whatever. Like, I haven't touched this in years, and you're going through the shelves. So there's keep, throw away, maybe sell or give away, whatever. But then there's the, I don't know what to do with this pile. I cannot make a decision on what pile it should go in. Put it in a box. When the box is full, tape it up, write the date on it, put it on the shelf. And then you pick if it's 1 or 2 years, it's probably going to be, should be one of those two.
Yeah.
If this box has never been opened in this amount of time, just toss the whole box. Do not open it. Don't look inside.
As my wife always likes to say when she goes, do we have to keep this? And I say, well, I'll be right here with you while you throw it away. I'll even hold your hand while you throw it away. Now, and Teresa, she's the ultimate declutterer. I mean, she can help you out.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess getting some help is good. Somebody to walk you through it. There was a meme on Facebook. It was Bilbo. Of course, in the movie, he's holding the ring.
Yeah.
But in this meme, he's holding probably a 10-year-old phone charger to a phone that's already gone. He's like, and he says, it's mine. Why shouldn't I keep it?
I've seen that meme used for a lot of things,
And I have a box of old cords and chargers and wires. I have no idea what they're even for, but I'm like,
oh, man. We have an epic box of old wall warts, as I call them, power supplies for Lord only knows what at work. And it's like, okay, we don't need to add to that anymore.
Yeah, right.
Let's go back to Ecclesiastes 3, verse 12. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. Yes, doing good is always advised.
Good.
Verse 13. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. Talking about jobs and employment, to be able to enjoy your labor, to be able to enjoy what you do. But also, I mean, this says it pretty basically, the good of all his labor. The work isn't a curse. Back in the garden when God said, well, now that you did this thing, he said that by the sweat of your brow, you'll work the ground. But he had already told them to work the ground before they sinned.
Right.
So the work is not the sin. But he's just saying the conditions aren't going to be as good and it's not going to bring forth fruit for you. It's just going to be a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the work that he ordained for us to do.
Right.
And so to enjoy your work, that truly is a gift of God if you can enjoy what you do.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two thoughts or ways of endeavoring to enjoy your work. One is what most people think of, like, find your dream job.
Right, right.
But I think the other is just giving it to God if it's not your dream job. And again, we've talked about this before, but it's like, this is just a job I don't hate. It pays the bills and I don't really like it. It's mostly boring or whatever. Like, again, there's nothing wrong with pursuing a job that's more fulfilling or pays more or whatever, better hours. But whatever situation you're in, you can just bemoan and whine and cry and just be angry that you hate this job. But
right.
Again, there's a time for everything. This too shall pass. And and enjoy it as the best you can. again, ultimately saying, like, this is what God has for me right now, and I'm going to endeavor to live for him in the middle of this.
Right.
And specifically look for the things that you can appreciate about it.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And,
I mean, for guys, it's kind of a big deal because a lot of times it ends up being an identity thing, which is not what God intended, and that's why it's such a big deal to a lot of guys that they're not doing what they really dreamt of doing, which I've commented on my own issues with that, too, right. You know, facing that. It's like, it's just what I do. It's not who I am.
Right.
So finding our identity in our work, that's why it's such a gross disappointment if you don't get to do what you want. And it's like, well, that's not really how God is intending it for it to be, and it's not how he wants you to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll back it up a little bit, get some context here, because he's talking about basically addressing everybody, you know, different groups of people to end up covering everybody. But in Colossians 3, verse 8, starting in 18, wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men-pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. Verse 23, and whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality. So he's saying right there that doing what we do heartily as unto the Lord, that there is a reward of the inheritance for doing that.
One other thought was on the idea of guys seeing their career or work as their identity. And I know I've heard other people say this, that, you know, oh, what do? I am a carpenter. I am whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's even in the way we say it. And I personally don't think it's like something we say, oh, we got to change how we say it and that'll fix everything. Not really.
No. Right.
For one thing, you know, the Bible says a lot of, you know, this guy was this, he was that, you know, whatever. It's like,
yep.
It's really how you look at it and feel about it. And you've got to, when you're feeling a lie from the enemy,
yeah.
It feels strong to you, you just got to.
Say no.
Say no. This is the truth. Even though I don't feel like it's true, this is what God says about me.
Right, exactly. This is who God says I am because of who he is.
2 Samuel 5:11. Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent envoys to David along with cedar logs and carpenters and stonemasons. And they built a palace for David. So he didn't say he sent people who do carpentry. He said he sent carpenters. So
right.
Whatever. I don't think it's a big deal that we
right.
use that.
It really is how we think about it, how we perceive it, yeah. How we live because of it.
I know there's kind of a movement that I've heard like in podcasts and videos that people don't want to use the word slave. Like
right.
During the early part of America, this guy was a slave. Like, no, say he was an enslaved person. Okay, I get it. I get what you're doing. You're trying to say this is not his identity. This is, you know, something that happened. Somebody pushed on him. Or it's like, I'm just not sure that it.
Right. I don't know that it's really all that helpful.
Right.
It doesn't change history.
Right. And as so many other things do, is like, oh, that term is now seen as offensive. Let's change it. And then in 50 years, it's the new term is the same connotation.
Yeah. 50 years, I just give it 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's continue on here in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 16. Moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. I said in my heart, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them, that they may see that they themselves are like animals.
So that verse 15, whatever has been, what will be, has been before.
There's nothing new under the sun.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yep.
And part of me wants to say, like, what about cars? What about spaceships? What about?
Yeah.
I think the gist of it is like all the tricks, all the things that people want to do in their life, everything that they, you know, that's common to humans. Like people have the same desires, the same aspirations, the same, you know.
Yep.
And I think there's lots of examples in history of people like, this is a new thing. It's like, yeah, this was like 50 years ago. Or
right.
100 years ago, someone already invented this. Like, come on. Going back to, we're talking about time to keep and a time to throw away. So Lynn and I, for a little while, we're watching the show Hoarders.
Yeah.
This is why I said earlier, like, my dad was not, like, a clinical hoarder. Apparently, like, it's a real psychological disease or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And these people, they have, like, stuff stacked to the ceiling in every room in their house. Some people might have a path, but most of them, it seemed like they had to crawl over their stuff to get from one place to the other. And it wasn't just, it was stuff that I would be like, this is, like, literal garbage.
Yeah.
Some of them, like, you know, they has, like, cat pee on it and mouse poop, and they're like, nope, can't get rid of it. Like, or some one lady, like, one of the things was newspapers, just stacks and stacks of newspapers. Like, a podcast that I listened to, they did an episode on hoarding disorder, I think they call it.
Yeah.
And they said that, you know, of course, they've done studies and tests into it and tried to figure out how this thing works and what cures and whatever. In their research, one of the things they would do with a hoarder is they would, like, give them, a paper clip. Like, here, this is yours. Like, oh, thanks. And then they would say, actually, we wanted to give it to this other guy. Do you mind if we have it back? And they would have, like, their brain hooked up to some machine. And, like, their brain just goes crazy, like, fear. Like, no, I can't give you it. It's mine. Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, once it's in their possession, they're, like, terrified to lose it. Like.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what the item is.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stories about Depression-era people that lived through that, like, collecting the styrofoam that goes underneath meat when you buy it at the meat market and things like that, just stacks of all kinds of things. It's like, you don't know what, we have another depression again, we have nothing.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's tough. That is tough. Yeah, I say that is tough. We have no idea right now in America how we live. We have no idea.
Right.
So let me just recap on moments, on the quote I read about the moments, that if we would have known they were just moments, we would have valued them a lot more. Again, this won't be the last time talking about the subject, and it's certainly not the first.
Right.
That there's just such a drone of activity in today's society. There's so much busyness, and a lot of it is literally just busyness. It's not important. It's not valuable. And it keeps you from stopping and seeing the moments. I mean, the whole week, month, year goes by, and you have no idea what even happened.
Right.
And by the grace of God, hopefully you are able to see things as they unfold, to realize the value of the moment.
I feel like everything I say comes from a different podcast, but there was another podcast I was listening to, and this guy was talking about how if we didn't have photography, I suppose you could say, you know, you could have a diary before photography, but
yeah.
He said there's vacations that I took, like week or 2 week long vacations that I wouldn't even remember ever happened if I didn't stumble upon the photos from.
Yeah.
Like somebody could say, remember the vacation we went to here? I'm like, nope. No recollection at all? Nope. Like, where's a photo? Like, okay, now I remember.
Yeah. Which is my plug for photography.
Right.
The idea that I really had a struggle with at one point, it really being an obsession, and it ended up being rooted in not wanting to forget the past because there were things I feel like were just gone, and I hadn't dealt with the fact that they're gone. It's like, okay, I'm not going to get it back. I can't, you know, grasping on there and taking every photo I possibly can of everything I ever possibly do is not going to bring it back.
Yeah, right.
But on the upside, you know, photos really can remind us, help us value those moments. And because it's one image, it's not a video, it forces you to, you're just staring at that moment. There it is. Mm-hmm. Which is why those are some of my favorite kind of photos to take is candids, because you just catch life happening and you just never know what you're going to catch.
Right. It was actually just earlier today, I was listening to Audio Bible at work, and I came across these two verses I thought were interesting put next to each other. So Ecclesiastes 7, 21 through 22. Do not listen to everything people say. You might hear your own servant say bad things about you, and you know that many times you have said bad things about other people. Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
That made me think of, like, gossip, like work gossip.
Yeah.
I feel like in most companies, everyone is talking about somebody else, like, constantly. It's like 90% of conversations. And I remember the time that it hit me, like, wait a minute. I wonder if everyone's talking about me, too, at some point. And I was talking to a guy about it, and I said, I heard a thing about, like, if you really want to, like, cut out the gossip, one way to look at it is, if you would not say it to someone's face, don't say it.
yeah.
to anybody. And again, there's some exceptions, but you can use those to justify when it's not right. But so I said that to this guy, and he says, yeah, but would you really want everybody to come up and say things to your face? I said, no, that's not the point. No,
right.
I don't want to know what everyone thinks about me.
Yeah.
That would be too much. The point is, don't say it.
Yeah, like, if you wouldn't have the nerve to say it to their face, don't say it.
Right. And, of course, I don't live that way. I've made efforts here and there, but it's haven't been that successful. So the thing I thought was interesting about this verse, and then in a later verse, so I'll just repeat the part here that I want to apply. So, do not listen to everything people say. You might hear your own servant saying bad things about you. But then in Ecclesiastes 10, do not revile the king, even in your thoughts.
Yeah.
Or curse the rich in your bedroom, because a bird in the sky may carry your words, and a bird on the wing may report what you say.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's the other side. Like, don't listen to everything everyone says. And
watch your tongue.
Watch your tongue. Someone might hear what you say.
Yep.
And I've wondered, like, is that where the "a little bird told me" saying comes from?
Oh, probably.
I don't know. I know a lot of sayings come from the Bible that we don't even realize, but I remember there was a article or something I saw online that showed, it was like, you know, hundreds of English sayings like to come directly from the Bible that people have no idea. Like,
yeah.
Or versions of sayings were originally based on that. But
then you got Doug, who one of his sayings was that if you're not part of the problem or part of the solution, then you don't really need to be involved or really know. As
right.
far as, you know, talking about situation with somebody, it's like, if you're not already in the situation that you're part of the problem and you don't have a solution for this, then why do you even need to know about it?
Right, right.
It is a form of gossip. It's like, it's information you don't need.
Yeah. Dave Ramsey has said that he's got, like, I don't know, at the time it was like 200 employees or something in his company. He was saying that his company every year, at least at that time, would win best place to work in whatever state he's in.
Yeah.
But he said one of their policies is no gossip.
Okay.
And he says every time he says this, somebody's, oh yeah, good luck enforcing that. And he's like, we make it a priority. But the thing is, you have to have a definition in order to say, okay, you've just crossed the line and here's how. So basically what he says is, like, if you have a problem or a complaint or something negative to say, and I don't remember his exact wording on it, but you are only allowed to verbalize it to the person you have the problem with.
Right.
Or their supervisor. Or the person who's in charge of fixing the problem.
Right.
And nobody else.
Right.
And he said, like, they will literally fire people if they break that rule. And he's like, it may sound harsh or unnecessary, but the people love the atmosphere.
Yeah.
There's no gossip.
Yeah.
And sure, there might be gossip that I never hear of. But he said one of the things is when a new person comes on and they're like, oh, did you see what that guy did? Everybody else in the room is like, well, I got to go. They don't want to get sucked into it because they know.
Yeah, no audience for you.
Yeah, right. And I just feel like, oh, that would be so cool to work at a place like that.
Yes, yeah, to have peace and to not have all this stuff floating about. And it's like, no, what you see is what you get.
Right.
There's not all this stuff in the background going on.
But like we said, someday it's going to be true for all of eternity.
Yeah. About this, we can end on this scripture on note of on gossip in Proverbs 18. Let's pick it up in verse 6. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. Verse 8. The words of a talebearer, a.k.a. gossiper, are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. So right there, the Bible's telling us God knows how these things are consumed, so to speak, by people, that it's a deep-seated thing to gossip and have inside information on people and situations and things. But he's saying it is not healthy.